Hello, just a quick bit before this week's episode to let you know that we have a Patreon you can subscribe to if you like what we're doing here and you want more of it. You probably already knew that. We don't stop going on about it. What you didn't know is that you can currently get a little free trial, so you know exactly what you'd get as part of your subscription. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes to get your first 7 days free. All you need to do is pick which tier you'd like a free trial of. The Biggest Mates tier is the one that has all the extras in it. And then for 7 days, you are free to listen to any episode we've released in the last 6 months. You can cancel any time or just leave the subscription rolling if you like what you find. It's charged monthly. And during any month, as part of that Biggest Mates tier, you'll get ad-free episodes of this show every Monday. You'll get a brand new episode of our new Manic Street Preacher show every month. 2 episodes every month of the Ultimate Playlist, our themed playlist show, where we talk about all kinds of different music, different artists, different genres, different eras, and 1 or 2 bonus episodes every month, depending on the length of the month. That's 2 episodes every week. There's also other tiers to trial. One that is just the Manic Show and ad-free What Is Music episodes, and another that is just ad-free What Is Music episodes. But hey, if the first 7 days are free, why not try a bit of everything? Plus, all tiers include access to the exclusive subscriber-only Discord where we discuss the shows, the bands we've covered, various music topics, and loads of other stuff, including some games that the friendly community have devised themselves. So head on over to our Patreon page now to claim your free 7-day trial. Go to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in our show notes. See you there.
Went to Bulgaria.
Great.
Hello, and welcome to What Is Music, a music podcast about music.
We're a podcast that focuses on discographies in their entirety, doing deep dives on one artist at a time. You join us in season 4, which is called Is It Rad In Your Head? A critical analysis of the history, cultural impact, and music of Radiohead. We're going through their entire career, album by album, track by track, asking questions like, does context matter when you're listening to music? Does knowing the history of an artist affect your appreciation of their output? And this season, we're of course asking, is it rad in your head? And to be clear, we're asking, is it rad in your head in regards to the band Radiohead? Not, is it rad in your head in regards to this, the 4th season of our podcast, which is called Is It Rad In Your Head? And which is now in your head. I'm Adam Scott Glasspool. I am a host of a music podcast. I love the artistry, the emotion, also the context that surrounds music. With me, as always, is someone who said they don't care about art or talking about art, doesn't really often relate personally to music, but is also a host of a music podcast. It's Lucas Way. In the middle of that, we have someone who can appreciate context, art, and subject matter, but can't always put it into words, and is also a host of a music podcast, Steve Murphy. And thinking about that introduction, from what I can work out, I've realised that we're all hosts of a music podcast, and this is the music podcast that we all host. I've just sort of put that together in my head there. That's interesting, isn't it? What do you make of that, guys?
We should do a podcast.
I think we should quit doing a podcast.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, it's got to be the opposite.
Should we do a podcast about how we do this podcast?
Yeah. Patreon.
That's the Patreon. What is
podcast?
No, what is music?
A music podcast about music podcast.
yeah, great. Good. Yeah. Excellent. Done. How are you people? How was your holiday in Bulgaria? Because you mentioned that it was going to be a very, very long wedding full of drinking and eating. Are you still drunk or are you still hungover?
I've stopped drinking for the foreseeable.
And was that the final straw?
Yeah, maybe. No, it wasn't too bad, like, actually. They did have the homemade alcohol on the tables, and that was brewed. He started making it the day the father of the bride made it, and he started making it the day she was born to have on her wedding day.
What
did you not understand?
It's just mad.
Oh, okay, right.
What if she never got married?
Well, you
never drink it. It's just one of those sad bottles that is collecting dust in the house.
Oh, it's loads of bottles.
Loads of kids?
No, they all just one bottle per table. Like, and it's basically whiskey, but insane.
Oh, I see what you mean. It's like a batch. Okay, I've got you. Yeah. Was it good?
It's fine. The wedding was lovely. It was so hot. It was really lovely though. Yeah, great holiday. Really sad to be back. But I've got a coffee and not a beer, so
hey, that's pretty good. A coffee at 20 past seven, absolute madness. I assume that's going to trigger Lucas into wanting a decaf, though.
Do you want to,
as it did last time. Oh, maybe text your wife, get a little decaf.
Nah, she's out.
No. What are you going to do?
No.
I've got a gin next to me instead.
Tell you what, Luke, if you pop off, because I assume you don't want to be here.
Off.
I don't assume you don't want to be here for this episode anyway.
No, I don't. I could take or leave. So and it's going to take me this long to make a coffee anyway.
Yeah.
Because I've really got the science down. I've really got the science down of the brew. You know?
Oh, okay.
Have you?
You know, you get your jar.
Oh, yeah.
You open up your jar.
Nice. Classic. Mm.
Put a spoon in the jar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's
milk in before hot water.
Sure.
Obviously.
I don't do that.
Oh, well, it's burn your beer, you burn your roast.
Yeah, but it takes longer. You've got to stir longer. Fuck that.
How does it take longer? How does it explain to me how it takes longer?
Because
you've got to pour it in and stir and then pour it in, or you pour it in and stir and then you pour it in.
I think it takes less time because you can pour in the milk while you're waiting for the water to boil.
Yeah, but then it doesn't dissolve as quickly into the, because it's like, it's not hot.
So, and then you pour in the hot water and then you give it a stir.
I agree with you. It makes it, but fuck that. Sounds namby-pamby and left and woke.
Oh, I agree it makes the coffee better, but it's not worth it because you might have to stir like seven
rotations. Sounds like you're making
rotations.
Woke coffee to me.
Yeah, no, I'm with Steve, actually. This sounds like some fucking woke nonsense. We are going through the entire discography of Prostrate Teeth Homes Radiohead.
No.
Today we are looking at their 2004 DVD release, The Most Gigantic Lying Mouth of All Time. In order to add to our collective knowledge, which should at some point form the basis of the answer to the question, what is music? So far, from what you've learned, guys, what is music?
A music podcast about music.
Lovely.
I don't know, something.
Okay.
And someone.
An artistic expression of one's soul.
Nice, that's really
Lovely.
Good.
Lovely, that's really good. That's really good. So, The Most Gigantic Lying Mouth of All Time. It's a weird little artifact, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was two hours of my life, wasn't it?
What is it?
That was nearly 2 hours of my life is what it was.
That was too scary, funny.
Boring.
Weird.
Yeah.
And sometimes tedious. 2 hours
Yeah,
of
it's
my
all
life.
Those things. It's all of those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I mean, we'll get into like our favourite bits from it in a bit, I suppose. We'll kind of go through it minute by minute, guys. I've obviously got notes on every single shot that occurs in The Most Gigantic Lying Mouth of All Time. But let's talk about the background a little bit because we didn't actually cover it. All I said in the Hail to the Thief episodes was they had planned to like that they put up their own TV channel on the internet, which is kind of true and kind of not. So originally the idea, right, as part of the promotion for Hail to the Thief, was that Radiohead would have their own television channel, right?
Right.
Like on TV. Like it would just be on 24 hours a day, Radiohead on your Skybox or whatever, and you could just flick to it and it would be 24 hours a day of this this stuff that we've got in front of us today. So faced with that idea, they started putting together loads of footage that they had lying around or stuff from the webcasts that they've done, bits of art that they made, footage of them recording songs, music videos that they had, and they put a message up on their website saying, anybody who wants to contribute things, send in the tapes to our studio. And they also then, because they were recording the album at the time, started making new clips of stuff while they were recording Hail to the Thief, some of which make it into this. And then, you know, budgets, cutbacks meant they couldn't have their own TV channel.
Oh,
it became impractically expensive. So they edited it down into 4 episodes of TV that would be broadcast on an existing channel. Okay, on like terrestrial British TV. I could see something like this being late night Channel 4.
Yeah.
Right? For like 4 weeks. Like every like Friday night at 5 past midnight.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's past midnight.
It's like Eurotrash time. Do you remember that?
Yeah. It's not the time. It's not even like the post prime time where you at least get stuff like... Spaced.
No.
Or Brass Eye.
Oh, it's after that.
It's later than that. It's later than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same slot that was originally offered, I would think. And it's something that this reminds me of, is the Adam and Joe show.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because they both
nowhere near as good.
Well, it's not as funny, but it is kind of like the same thing. It's loads of homemade stuff just sort of cobbled together, like, randomly.
Yeah.
So it's just
also
kind of like, yeah.
Dolls doing things.
Yeah, dolls and
bears
stop
and
motion.
Stuff.
And,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sort of all that stuff.
Adam Buxton is quite a bear.
That's true. Yeah, he is.
He's a fuzzy little man peach.
Whoever they initially pitched that idea to, whichever TV station they initially pitched it to, and they said yes, when they then watched what they wanted to broadcast, they went, well, that's obviously too weird to put on TV, guys. We won't be showing that. So Radiohead had to create their own TV channel on their website, radiohead.tv, which is where the four episodes that we have on the DVD were broadcast in glorious QuickTime, which is a word I've not considered in so long. Programming started on the hour. Anyone who was late couldn't watch the episode. They instead got a test card and, like, intermission music instead, like music that went din, 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 like stuff like that.
And I bet you that some people were like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, oh, what really are you doing here? And it's,
yeah,
like
20
3
minutes
hours later,
it's like, yeah,
okay.
It's a similar thing to what they did with the In Rainbows release, where anybody who hadn't paid any money for the download had to put up with like a minute or so of the screen just being like, you are being held in a queue, which nobody else had to bother with if you paid money for it.
Even if wouldn't you, know I paid?
Yeah, I paid as well.
Even if you paid a penny, you wouldn't get the...
Yeah. Yeah. It was shown on that website in the build-up to Hail to the Thief and repeated whilst it had been out for a little while. They called the show the most gigantic lying mouth of all time after a piece of work by German photo collage artist John Hartfield, who famously did artworks focusing on the rise of fascism and Nazism in Europe around the time of the Second World War, which is obviously a theme that we touched on. Hail to the Thief being about the kind of the new rise of fascism, so it all kind of ties in with that. But we've done the album. We know that they went on hiatus in April 2004 after the Hail to the Thief tour had finished, and then they released the DVD of the four episodes of The Most Gigantic Lion Mouth of All Time on December the 1st, 2004. It's directed by Chris Brann, who used to go by the Vapor Brothers, who were kind of like a late 90s, early 2000s visual collective kind of thing. And he kind of pulled all of the four episodes together from tapes and tapes and tapes of footage, helped by Dilly Gent. The artwork for the DVD and the artwork used in the show that you see is done by Stanley Donwood. But I don't know if you saw in the credits, guys, there's actually a second person who did a bunch of the artwork.
Is there?
It's called Dr. Chalk.
No.
Who is that? We've seen him before. He's back. He's come back.
He's back.
He's back. He's back. He's back. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking he's back.
Yeah.
Is he the cereal man?
Yeah.
Dr. Chalk. Is it called Dr. Chocolate?
Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, Dr. Chocolate.
I think it's Dr. Octopus. Yeah.
Doctor, really, do you think so?
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, he's back.
So it's Tom York.
It's Tom York. Yeah, just to be very clear on that. So what is this?
I would say
it's
this is...
A load of old bollocks.
It's like a university... like, a lot of them are like a film art project. Like, you can imagine that someone would do this in college. I mean, like, it's got obviously interspliced with stuff that's, you know, like actually them playing live and them in the studio, which are really cool, those bits. I don't know. I liked it. I kind of weirdly liked it. I found it quite funny. Like, I don't know if it was entertaining. What's the opposite of entertaining? Exit-taining?
Bored.
Information.
I think it's exit-taining.
But it wasn't information. It wasn't information either. It was infotainment.
Yeah.
But Lucas does make a good point. The opposite of entertaining is usually boring.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't necessarily find it boring, but I think it's like a weird variety show, right?
Yeah.
And it has Radiohead made clips sent in by artists and directors, and then bits and pieces of like footage that they had from the studio and from their webcast or whatever. And there's footage of them recording Hail to the Thief and stuff.
Nowhere near enough of that though.
Yeah, that's the stuff that is kind of the most interesting stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want, like we've talked about this before, I'd much rather just watch them doing the studio. I'd much rather watch four episodes of behind the scenes of them in the studio and not watch a song, but there's some shapes.
There's some shapes. There is one that's literally just, there's a song and some shapes.
Yeah.
There's one that's literally that. Yeah.
Good song. Don't care about the shapes.
As soon as I saw Tom York sat behind a mixing desk, I thought, Lucas is going to love this. And then like I think 10 seconds later, there's some dolls. It's like, you were like, for fuck's sake.
So fuck it, there's dolls all over the place. There's creepy dolls and creepy claymation everywhere. All right, here's a little thing. Right. Yeah. Like you say, it's not like something they would do at college or something. Just putting a filter on something uninteresting doesn't make it interesting.
Disagree.
That's what Instagram is.
Just putting some shit, bad effects on something boring doesn't make it not boring.
Well, yeah, now that is true, kind of. Right. And if that's all that anybody did, then yeah, I'd agree with you. But there's shots of like people just walking in the street that are put into like negative, right? And you'd think just that on its own, it's kind of boring. But then you kind of think, oh, well, it's playing into this idea of like surveillance, which, you know, was a hot button topic at the time. And then it has all the lyrics from Hail to the Thief like flashing up at the same time. And the whole vibe of it, rather than just focusing on like the technicalities of it, which is, you know, that the whole vibe of it adds up to something. It becomes something that's more than a sum of its parts. And I don't think that's actually necessarily the case on The Most Gigantic Loudmouth of All Time. But it is for kind of visual art in general. And I'm looking at a book, which
I'm not the target audience for.
Right, exactly. But we've talked about this book before because it's next to Nick Cave's Complete Lyrics, 1978 to 2013. I've got Why Your Five-Year-Old Could Not Have Done That, which is about modern art. And it kind of focuses on, yes, the technicalities of this are very, very easy, but the thought that it's putting forward and the ideas behind it are actually quite complex and interesting.
So what ideas were behind Sit Down, Stand Up, which is the song? And it's just the footage of a moving vehicle.
Don't know. I've got absolutely no idea. There's a delay effect on it, isn't there?
Oh.
Yeah. But again, the technicalities of it, yeah, nothing. And to be honest, ideas-wise, even then, nothing hit me. But quite like looking at it. It was quite pretty.
It's collage-y. It's like, I forgot the name of it, but the OK Computer. Meeting People is Easy. It's similar vibe, but maybe a bit more silly. Effort, well, a lot more silly and a lot less angry.
I don't think it's that silly. There's a few bits of silly, but mostly it's montage.
No.
Not even montage. Visual art, like Adam
says. It's visual art. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing that struck me this time, right, because I watched all four episodes twice and I did both in a row, but both sittings. I did two sittings of it. It's not as formless as I remember it being. It is structured like a variety show, with each episode following more or less the same format. So it's like,
yeah, there is like, there's always the interview section,
yeah,
and the guy at the start.
Yeah, so it's introduced.
Who
and
is the
ended.
Man at the start?
That's Chieftain Mews.
Chieftain Mews.
It's Chieftain Mews.
That's Chieftain Mews, a new shadowy figure in our canon. But then, right, so then the bulk of it is animated videos and art pieces that are soundtracked by bits of Radiohead songs, and you get two sections of that in every episode, and in the middle there's always some Radiohead footage. It's either them in the studio or Tom playing live or something like that. And then at the end there's a full music video which uses a whole Radiohead song, and then we finish with a Radiohead live performance. That is every single episode, which I thought was interesting because I hadn't picked up on that before. It's like real TV. It's like a variety show. It always ends with the band coming on at the end to play you off.
Yeah.
which is kind of cool. And it obviously has the same opening credits at the beginning every time, and the opening credits are excellent.
They are.
It's an off, I love it. It's an off-brand version of
Yeah.
It's not quite that.
It's their own royalty-free version.
Slightly off version of that.
You mean like your Cruise View's Mission Impossible theme?
No, that's they ripped us off. They ripped us off, actually. And it has their photo shots.
Yes. so good.
That turn into goats.
Yeah, or sheep. Mm.
And then there's like a mad breakdancing skeleton thing. And that's the beginning of every episode.
Who is playing Chieftain Muse?
So that is a digital composite character. It's played possibly by about three people.
Because it looks like my old housemate at uni.
Well, Lucas, Lucas, I don't want to be unkind. It doesn't not look like you, mate. Because you've got quite a thin like bottom of your face and a goatee at the moment.
I've not got a goatee.
It's not you. But that is Nigel. It's Nigel Godrich, right? Mostly. Right. But you can see the mouth is actually like, it's quite difficult to tell because it's like 2004 DVD quality, right? But the mouth is actually disconnected. It's digitally imposed onto the face. And then the top bit of his head is
Too far down, isn't it? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's very weird. He introduces every episode.
And signs it off as well.
He does the definitive version of No Surprises.
Oh, well, yeah. I've got a big note here saying karaoke version of No Surprises. Better than the original, ?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. I love it.
I also like when he says, if you want to write into this show, just write into us with just your age.
Yeah. Write to us stating your age. Just your age.
And it's that Radiohead thing of like, is it funny or is it creepy? The bit where he goes, welcome to the most gigantic lying mouth of all time. All footage has been pre-watched by adults. It's just very odd. Very, very odd.
And of course, the amazing sign off, please don't fall in love with me. It's so good.
What's the rest of the thing that he says?
I can't remember.
The rest of the thing? Oh, please don't fall in love with me. I can't repay you. All my love is used up on me. It's great. I just love shit like that. We're in the era where Radiohead have like lightened up and now they're doing comedy, I guess. Yeah. They're doing like some comedy sketches.
Those bits are okay. The little interview sections are like mildly funny.
Yeah.
Depending on which ones they are.
Well, they were. You can see Tom having a great time and like pissing himself like at the questions. He's got a voice effect on him, so he's just too low and he's talking about...
No.
What?
The rest of the time he has a voice effect on him. That's his real voice.
Right, yes, of course.
Yeah. Whenever you've heard him in other interviews, he requests they pitch him up.
Got it.
That is Tom York's real voice.
Yeah.
Which is incredible that he can hit those falsetto notes when he talks like this. Yeah.
But then basically as soon as any music starts playing, I'm off.
Yeah?
Because I know I'm about to see some visual bollocks.
Do you know what, right? Some of it is visual bollocks, and I think some of it, I think you can kind of get down with the technicalities of it because some of it's really, really, really well done.
There's some cool claymation.
Mm.
Yeah.
And animation. There's in the second episode, there's this claymation rabbit and like a creepy doll face man.
Mm-hmm. For Where I End and You Begin. Yeah.
And I don't know, Steve probably more likely to remember this. Do you remember like a creepy claymation thing we used to always for some reason put on a TV at parties, which was like a horrible kids' TV show from the 80s or the 70s. Yeah. It was like a creepy doll-faced monster on the moon.
Yeah, and he was like...
horrible.
Who are you? An angel. And he's like, what's your name?
Yeah,
Satan.
Really fucking, really fucked up. It's exactly like that.
Steve, do you remember when we wanted to do a sketch show, right? But we didn't, and we just had a video camera.
Yeah.
And we just went out and just did whatever came into our heads that day.
Yeah, edited by pressing start and stop on the camera, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, same vibe. Same vibe as this.
It really is.
Do you remember when, before that even, we were like, well, we want to write comedy sketches or do comedy bits. We don't have a camera. But what I did have was a security camera outside of my front door that you could record on our VHS recorder because it was hooked up to the TV. So we did it that way.
Oh, God, we were punk.
Yeah. So it's I really like the spirit of this. So much of it is just like, I know I want to do something and I'm going to do like the most homemade sort of version of it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this stuff, if you took it out of its context, you could realistically see it being played in an art gallery. Right?
Yeah.
Or like you could go to the Tate Modern and you're in a little room where there's music that's going and there's a claymation dog being reanimated on a screen and you watch it and you go like,
Yeah,
okay. And then you sort of walk away from it.
Maybe read the blurb, read the little placard and go, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. All right, well, what's next? That's what I think this is like.
I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't go to an art gallery.
I wouldn't have... Excuse me. I wouldn't go to a modern art gallery.
Bonus episode. Lucas... We take Lucas to a modern art gallery.
We go to the Tate Modern, and Lucas calls everything faffy bollocks.
I went to the MoMA in New York, and it was just a load of faffy bollocks.
Oh, mate, I love all of that shit.
The MoMA's the Museum of the Moving Image. No, that's the MoMA.
Me more.
MoMA.
Museum of Modern Art.
Yeah.
I also went to the Museum of the Moving Image, which is a very similar acronym.
It is.
Initialism.
Yes.
Acronym.
Of course, because you pronounce it as a word.
MoMA. NASA.
The thing about visual art, though, is that I do sometimes just like how it looks.
Yeah.
Like, if I just look at it and go, oh, I like that. That's it, and that's the only thought I will put into
it.
You like the pretty shapes and colours.
I'll never not be impressed by stop motion. I think it's magic. Yeah, I think it's insane. And like even the awfully drawn biro sketches of there's a cat in school and the rats are going.
And the rats are the best.
Animal rights. And then he goes outside, and then a horse tells him to be wild. And he kind of goes rah.
stands up to the bullies.
It looks shit. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if you were just to see that sketch, but it's moving in such a way that it's really compelling to watch.
Well, it's because, like, the animation is so cool on that one. Some of it's paper cutouts, but also it's things like, to animate the faces, they've clearly drawn, like, pencil on paper, photographed it, rubbed it out, and then drawn the next bit, rubbed it out, drawn the next bit, rubbed it. And you can see all the smudges and stuff that go around their faces.
Yeah.
It's a really cool style. That's actually the first clip that comes up in episode one, they really set their stall out. They really hit you with the vibe, because the first thing is Tom DJing, images from the point of view of a car driving up a road that they then reverse and put into negative, and words on the screen that are lyrics from Hail to the Thief. And then a shot of Johnny holding a bit of paper that says, "Now we see you." And that's all like little bits from their webcasts that they would do. This has a similar vibe to the webcast, but it's more interviews, live performances, and then them like DJing and stuff. Incidentally, that first little bit of music we hear is Cymbal Rush from Tom York's solo album, The Eraser, which you'll have both heard by now. I don't know if you recognise it. Yeah, the bit goes dum 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 boom 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 boom, that bit. Yeah. After the cat girl is The Slave, which again I really like.
Which one
is
that?
It's the one with the guy who's going through his daily routine.
That's very OK Computer, isn't it? Just that whole it's really going, and then he dies. You go to work and then you die.
Yeah.
Amazing animation, and it's basically a GIF because it just replays, doesn't it?
Yes. It gets faster and faster, I think. Or the music gets faster. Or
doesn't
he
fall
anyway.
Off the peg, the hook, sooner each time? Mm-hmm. Something like that. It's very cool.
Very bleak.
Yeah,
very,
really very creepy bleak. Again.
And in between all of these things are the little interstitials, like words that flash up and then land on just one word that is like waiting or something like that. And it's done in the Hail to the Thief style. Or things that last 2 seconds that are chalk drawings of street signs that you would see in the US. Like it will flash up with just like air conditioning and then it will go away. Or like a chalk drawing of a parking sign and then that'll go away, or something that says live girls nude and then that goes away. Weird.
I feel like now this would get released in the form of like TikToks.
Interesting you say that.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Interesting you say that. Because in the build up to the Kid Amnesia re-release of Kid A and Amnesiac, they started a TikTok channel which was hosted by Chief DeMuse and had a lot of, some of it was faffy bollocks that was aimed like at kind of satirizing TikTok, and some of it was comedy sketches with Tom York and Stanley Donwood telling Chief DeMuse that he's not doing a good enough job and needs to get more views.
Getting enough views. Yeah. It's so good. He gets really sad about it.
Yeah. My Showbiz Life with Tom York. I like that he's billed with Tom York out of Radiohead.
Yeah, out of.
Just makes me laugh.
Them doing those little TikTok sketches.
Yeah.
That says to me they're not broken up. Because you wouldn't actively put in the effort in such
Again,
a way.
Again, it's just Tom and Stanley.
Just Tom and Stanley were the only ones who worked
on that. Even
still,
you're like doing something. You're not just going to the record label and going, re-release this bollocks because we want to get a few quid.
Oh, yeah, and Radiohead would never do that version of it. The record label did that without their permission around, like, 2009. So these new ones are kind of them having their little, no, this is how we would do it kind of thing, I think. But, yeah, no, I don't know. Because none of the rest of the band are in them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just Tom, Johnny, Ed, Colin, Phil, not in them. Nothing to do with it.
But talking of Tom, isn't it nice to see him just like having a nice time and laughing in this interview? Laughing. Talking
just
about
a laugh.
His free Russian egg from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's free petrol.
Oh. And that's the best thing about being a celebrity, is free petrol.
Yeah, what's that? That's the second time he's mentioned that twice.
Yeah.
We used to be famous. Get some free petrol.
Do you pay for petrol?
Yeah, did you not?
I haven't paid for petrol since we started the podcast.
Why am I paying for petrol?
Steve, it's really easy, mate. You go in, right? You fill
and
up.
You just go.
And then you just drive away.
Yeah, drive away.
And you just get a new car every time. Yeah. So they can't.
Is that what you do?
That seems expensive.
New car every journey.
What I do is when they run out and they try and like stop me, I roll down the window and go, I've got a podcast. And then I keep
everyone
driving.
Applauds.
Yeah. Little bits from the studio in there as well, isn't there? We see them jamming on there. Before it was even sort of a thing. These would have been shown before the album came out. It's them just sort of jamming on it. Johnny's on bass on that one, which is nice. It's nice to see them so open about the process of songwriting, I guess. A lot of bands wouldn't just release like their weird jams before you'd even heard the actual song.
Yeah.
There's an early version of Morning Mr. Magpie or Morning Milord.
Morning Milord.
Yeah.
I'd much prefer that title.
We can put that on the pinboard, actually.
Morning Mr. Magpie, yeah, put it on the pinboard.
Yeah, it's kind of folky and stompy, this one. Yeah, a very different version of it comes out later, Steve.
Right.
Very different indeed. You're struggling to place it in your memory.
I am, yeah. Can you see that?
I mean, you've only got three albums to go, mate, to place it in.
I recognise the song title. Is it called that? Or I recognise some of the song.
Yeah, it's called Morning Mr. Magpie, not Morning Milord, unfortunately.
Yeah, Morning Milord. And that's spelled M-L-U-D as well. Morning Milord.
Yes, it is.
Genuinely is. Morning Milord.
It's morning and it's spelled M-E-M-E-L-O-R-D.
Meme.
Morning Meme Lord.
Morning Meme Lord. That's what you say. That's what you say and you salute to every magpie, isn't it? Good morning, Meme Lord. And then you dab. And then the magpie does the floss.
And then that is the end of episode one. But before that, we, of course, are introduced to the Tripty Ensemble crew.
Are we supposed to be going in order? I'm bringing up things from all episodes
in no particular order.
Is this the Dolls?
Fine. Yeah, the Tripty Ensemble crew.
I hated
they're very famous,
the Dolls.
Aren't they?
Do you know what reminded me of? I have a story about Dolls. Our friend, Gareth, we used to go to London with his family because he was an only child, so like I'd come along to like family trips. We went to London, we stayed in this very old house. It's a very old townhouse. That is sad, isn't it? and it was like his grandparents' house or something. The room we stayed in was a room full of China dolls, like you'd see in a horror movie. Like the walls were covered, and we'd have to stay in that. And it was terrifying. And then, like, after we left, it turned out that, like, way back when, they bought it off the council or whatever because someone had literally been murdered in that house. They obviously didn't want to tell us that when we were staying in the room of dolls.
Sure, yeah.
But fuck me. That's what that reminded me of. I completely forgot about
it. Yeah, I mean, it is unsettling, isn't it?
That is the same holiday where I bought Ixnay on the Hombre by The Offspring and Atomic by Lit. So that dates
the birth of a
shite.
A real obsession for you. And that's the real birth of your music taste for that sort of period. This is the thing that reminds me most of the Adam and Joe Show.
It's
like because it's toys and dolls, isn't it? Yeah,
it is quite funny.
And then there's
quite funny. Like some of the words they were saying, I can't remember any of them. I haven't written any of them down. Some of the lyrics were just made me laugh.
Well, the song is called When an Angel Tries to Sell You Something. Mm. It's quite like a punk sort of thing. Then you get Skyscape. I should be shouting out the director's names of all of these, but I haven't, so I'm not going to. That's the one that occurred to me most, like, oh, you could see this in the Tate Modern. But then that's always been a component of Radiohead's career, I think. They're very into visual art. They do all the artwork alongside the albums and everything. Stanley is always present for the recording, so he's kind of like a part of the band, and he's a visual artist. And we know that they plan to have like a Kid A exhibition that gets turned into a video game. And this is a similar kind of thing, I think. It shows how ambitious they are and how they don't always hit what they're going to do. Like, this was supposed to be Radiohead having their own television channel, and it became four episodes on a DVD that no one's really seen.
How could you fill a television channel?
Well, like, we wouldn't have covered it if it was Adam, an old television channel.
Adam, do you remember, you know, we were talking about us making films. We were going to make a TV channel.
Yeah, we were going to see if we could make 24 hours worth of programming. Yeah. I don't even know.
Yeah, but then what do you do the next day?
Don't know. We hadn't thought that far ahead.
We didn't do it.
We didn't know. We didn't know how to broadcast it or anything. But that's what I'm saying is that was the original idea. Yeah. And then we worked it down to, I've got a security camera, shall we film exclusively front door based sketches?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, every joke had to be able to be done in front of our front door.
Mainly pizza delivery.
Another salesman.
It was, I think usually someone would end up just getting punched at the end because we didn't know how to write a punchline.
If you run out of jokes, our motto was, if you run out of a joke, run away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the end of the sketch, is when you run away. It's a similar kind of vibe, I think. Yes. And then episode two, obviously, is introduced with Chieftain Mew saying that he's rigid with excitement.
Yeah.
which is excellent.
And then the video that is just shapes, which is the gloaming.
Which one? Oh, the animated baby figure that is being shot through pieces of film.
No. Is it?
Yeah, it is. That's what it is. Yeah, it's a creepy, like, animated claymation baby kind of figure that is kind of doing that. And then it's interspersed with animated shapes and a face and stuff. I love this shit.
At this point, I was high as balls, so I don't know what happened from here on. I'm joking, I didn't.
I mean, that would be something.
Oh yeah, fuck that.
Do that. The next one though, the big switch is quite interesting because it's kind of like that black and white art film kind of thing. Shall I just blah 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 at you, because it really reminded me of really early Darren Aronofsky sort of stuff.
Yeah,
like it feels like it's from the school of like 90s experimental music video directors. And it all of that stuff, and it reminds me of these DVDs you could get, right, that were like, they were called The Work of Director Blank, like, and we had them in Barton Peveril College library. We had like the whole selection, and I remember, did you say spoilers?
Yeah, I meant to say dots, but I said spoilers.
spoilers. These were in the library when I was younger. And it was like The Works of Director Chris Cunningham, or The Works of Director Jonathan Glazer, or Spike Jones, or Michel Gondry, who, in fact, Knives Out was on there, because Michel Gondry did Knives Out, and he did some of the White Stripes ones as well. Didn't he do the Lego?
Oh, did he?
Knives Out only came out like 2-3 years ago.
It was very ahead of its time. Turns out Michel Gondry had made it. He'd done a Swedish version, like from Be Kind Rewind.
Of the Daniel Craig film.
Yeah, he had.
He did do Fell in Love with a Girl, yeah, the one with all
right,
the...
yes. And so many of those directors, like Chris Cunningham and Jonathan Glazer and stuff, they feel like they use the language of like 90s TV commercials. There's a lot of that in music videos around the time. This really reminded me of that.
Michel Gondry, maybe it's just because he was like prevalent at that time, but Michel Gondry screams to me, film student.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind had just come out.
Every film student loves that film.
Right,
that was my favourite film for a bit, because...
I tell you what, man, it's taken on a life of its own in terms of it being like, oh, it's such a niche film. Like, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is the Radiohead of the film. film world, like,
fuck you criticism.
No, it's like people going like, oh well, I don't know if you've actually heard of this film. It's called Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and fucking everybody's heard of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
It's like that James Acaster bit about I've heard of Brass Eye.
Right, yeah, right. It's exactly that.
We went to see that together. Adam, just me and you.
No, we didn't.
We did.
No, we didn't. What, Eternal Sunshine?
Were we with someone else?
We were with loads of people. Loads of us.
We were sat next to each other, and I stared at you the whole time. So that's all
this
I remember.
This is where Adam goes. I wasn't sat next to you.
This is where Adam goes. I've been dead for 10 years.
The reason I know that
we were sat next to each other, you're on my left, because at the end when it loops back round, you looked at me and you gave me a nod and you did a circle with your fingers to go, let's loop back round, Steve. And I'm like, cheers, thank you.
Well, he needs a little help. He needs a little push, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'm like,
I remember going to see a film with you and there was like a character that came onto screen, like, and it was quite an abrupt cut. And I remember going, like, so Peter Parker is Spider-Man. They're the same. They're the same character, actually.
That's it.
You were like, thanks.
Are we talking about
Docs?
Oh, this is real spoilers. This is actual spoilers.
In the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. He is. Yeah.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, plays Peter Parker, but he also is actually Spider-Man.
Which is confusing. I can see why.
With the fireman's helmet.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that is a part in it. It is confusing because you can't see his face, right? Because he's got a mask on. Yeah, I get that. That's fair.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Ahead of its time, wearing a mask all the time. Woke nonsense, if you ask me. then there's the Scream, which is very depressing. The No Surprises animation with the worm man in the elevator who screams and it turns into bats.
Yeah. It was nice. It was nice hearing like Fit Happier and No Surprises and stuff in this episode. Like,
It's not just Hell to the Thief stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is from Kid A and Amnesiac because that's when this was made, they were still recording Hell to the Thief. There's also a big portion of it that is stuff that we've never heard. Like, a lot of the background music is Radiohead, but it's stuff that actually never even got released outside of this.
Right.
Then there's the Worm Buffet Square Man, which won't really mean anything to anybody other than Radiohead fans, so we'll just sort of leave that.
Okay.
But it becomes a big part of their artwork.
Of the lore.
In the run-up to In Rainbows. Then, of course, Ed reading the Polar Express in a shirt and tie with a Santa mask on.
Oh, yeah. Is that Ed?
That's Ed.
He's like, is that enough?
Yeah, he just goes, is that enough?
Clearly, they're all having a fucking great time.
He's drunk as fuck in that clip. That's from their Christmas webcast that had come out like the year before.
Horrible mask.
Tom playing Fog at a live show. Oval Blobs to a Radiohead B-side is what I've got written down, which is it's absolute peak what Lucas was talking about, because it's literally just like some oblong shapes like moving in time to some
load of bollocks.
Music. Yes, a load of bollocks.
There's a monkey. All right, that's all right.
Turning the handle.
Creepy Monkey.
So that's Inside of My Head by Ashley Dean. Yeah, it reminded me of like, have you guys ever seen the very early animated works of David Lynch?
No.
I don't think I've ever seen any of the works of David Lynch in any capacity ever.
Have you not?
What would I say?
Twin Peaks.
Elaborate. Nope. I watched half an episode of Twin Peaks and couldn't be bothered.
Alan Wake.
Okay, excellent.
The video game.
No, that's not David Lynch.
And also that's not Twin Peaks. That's not doing David Lynch. That's doing Stephen King.
It's doing David Lynch via Stephen King via The X-Files, is what it's doing. Yeah.
Wait, Awake. Oh, that's good.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
God, what?
load of woke nonsense.
Maximum Pain.
Three.
Yeah.
In Brazil.
You wouldn't have seen Mulholland Drive, would you?
No.
But you might have seen The Elephant Man.
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Didn't see the original Dune before you say it.
David Lynch Night Round Mine, lads, or?
Nah.
David Lynch Night Round Mine? You might really like it, Lucas.
I'll have a David Lynch night, not around yours.
Okay. Can I come to yours?
I've got a better TV.
Yeah, that's probably true. The absolute
highlight. Always going to be about the most pristine experience.
I mean, I've only got it on DVD. Right, anyway.
Oh, gross. I'll tell you what, I've got an ever-growing collection of 4K Blu-rays, and I'll tell you what.
I bet they're all shite. Give me some of the... Absolutely. What are the names of the movies?
I bet all the Nolans.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Quite a few Attenboroughs.
Lord of the Rings?
Quite a few Attenboroughs. Now, the Lord of the Rings one's in my box in my Amazon wishlist. Haven't bought it yet.
Yeah, those Nolan ones...
It's like 90 quid.
They're limited at 2K. Don't know why you'd bother getting the 4K. Don't know why you'd bother.
Still good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Adam, shut your face. Still good.
The standout on the DVD for me is De Tripas y Corazón, which is directed by Juan Pablo Echeverri. It's the one that always sticks with me. It's the one we've already talked about with the creepy mannequin guy with the rabbit in his chest who pumps his heart, and then he starts running, and then he injects another mannequin guy with his own blood or whatever it is, and then that one dies.
This is the one that reminded me of the creepy doll face animation on the moon.
Yeah, but it also is very, very similar to, I think the director is Adam Jones, who did the...
Alex.
Yes, Ollis. he's the guy who did the Tool videos. Have you seen Schism, the creepy animated like little man with a mouth or a head? Really cool, but it really, it's all collects claymation.
Oh, I've got his Wikipedia.
Is it Adam Jones? Have I got that right?
Adam Jones,
Alex Jones, and he's a clown.
Yeah, Adam Jones, a Welsh former professional international rugby union player for Wales and the British and Irish Lions. He's one of a small group of Welsh players to have won three Grand Slams, including Gerald Davis, Gareth Edwards, JPR Williams, Ryan Jones, Gethin Jenkins, and Alan Hwyn Jones.
I don't know if that's the same Alex Jones.
Jones began his career with Neath before switching to the Ospreys with the regionalisation of Welsh rugby in 2003. Yeah. In his early career, Jones was often criticised for a lack of scrummaging power, but he has answered those critics with several seasons of dogged and dependable work in the front row of both Wales and the Ospreys. Did he write this Wikipedia entry?
Stellar work.
And then underneath, and also at one point, he directed a Tool video.
Yeah, nothing about his video visual artwork on there.
If you type Tool Schism, you'll get an idea. But it's very, it's just really creepy claymation, basically.
The raison d'être of this DVD, creepy claymation, the movie.
Yeah, they're the best bits. And
obviously.
Then there's a performance of Idiotech by the whole band.
I didn't actually expect us to go sketch by sketch.
Well, you've got it. You asked for it.
You've been on this podcast before, right?
No.
It's part of a session that they did at Air Studios in the year 2000, guys. Ooh, they've actually included some self-shot angles from the looks of it, because I've seen that YouTube video numerous times and it doesn't have the same angles as they use on this version.
I noticed that. Did you notice that, Lucas? I was like, what is this?
Yeah. The thing that stood out to me is I recognised the studio because it's where another band that we've covered have done an album.
Who was that? It was the Moose.
The Moose.
The Moose. Did they record in Air Studios, did they? Or did they do a session there?
I think it was Absolution, wasn't it?
Pass. If you've been on our TikTok, you'll have seen their performance of In Limbo from the same sessions. But they've put some lovely video effects on this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's nice.
Is it blue? Most of the stuff is blue whenever it's them.
I'm thinking of Air Studios, Luther Vandross recorded.
That's the one.
That's what you're thinking of. Okay. Of course. Listen to Me, Wandsworth Road. I really liked collage photo animation and drawing on top of the pictures. It was quite interesting. Hypnagoga is that thing of the... Is it stop animation, but using a human that made him look like he was floating in the garden?
Is that not Johnny?
No.
Oh.
It's not.
Yeah, that was very clever. That's just another dweeb. Another dweeb. Is that not in episode 3? I've written Johnny Greenwood bullet time.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we're in episode three. Absolutely. Absolutely, we are. And then two back-to-back sketches that I think are my highlights. One is And Murders of Crows, which is the really, I think, beautiful animation over I Will, with the crows that turn into stealth bombers. And then the dead crow turns into a tree, which turns into a building. Kind of reminded me of that bleak animation style from 1970s British films. Watership Down. It reminded me of Watership Down for some reason.
Yeah.
It had like a similar animation style, I think.
Never seen it.
Grim.
It's fine.
I've seen Animals of Farthing Wood.
Also grim.
Ooh, I don't think I've seen that, but I did have the books when I was
young. I had all the magazines and it told you how to draw them. I found them in the loft. I wonder if they're worth anything.
They won't be.
No. Okay.
Get your son to draw them. Are you gonna put your son into drawing? Because people from the podcast might not know this, because you've literally done nothing with it ever in your life, which is a real bugbear for me. Really annoys me. You're a really good artist. You can draw and stuff.
I paint Warhammer.
It's not the same.
That's not drawing.
It's not the same.
You should draw, mate. sack off the Warhammer, sack off all these other things you're not very good at, like Warhammer, Steve. Music, podcasting, all these things,
yeah.
And draw.
Steve, do you remember my genuine suggestion to you about what you should do with your drawing skill?
Yes, you do. Yes,
draw furry porn.
It's so valid.
Get it.
It's so valid.
You'd get so many high price commissions from people.
You
honestly.
Would, as long as you just don't mind.
Yeah.
I'd do it if I could.
If I could draw,
if
I'd
someone
be
said,
all over
draw
it.
Me as a wolf getting fucked by my dad as a bear, I'd draw it.
Also, could you do that just after this, please?
Yeah, could you? Yeah, could we do, could one each? Do one each?
It's a bit of your and
then, of course, after that very haunting, bleak animation over the war song, I Will, is My Showbiz Life with Ed O'Brien, which now, is...
The highlight.
The highlight of the whole thing. It's absolutely demented. He's being asked the same questions as Tom was in My Showbiz Life. So it's like, which, you know, have you ever snogged a fan? And which celebrity has a crush on you or whatever? But almost every answer he gives is, huh?
Yeah, I just love it so much.
And then the couple that he doesn't, huh, he still does a silly voice.
He does a silly voice. The only one that he actually answers is, have you ever snogged a fan? Okay. And he goes,
and he just says, yes.
Yes. And it's like... And which is there a celebrity that you is like so fucking demented? I love it, and I love
I've
him.
Forgotten.
You can see him cracking up, like
you can see him
just
struggling
not
to laugh. Yeah,
I have
yeah.
no idea how he's not laughing.
Well, I forgot that he's also gently humming to himself the whole way through.
Is he?
He's going. it's bizarre. And then it's footage of them actually recording 2 + 2 = 5, which I imagine you were kind of into, Lucas.
I mean, it's a good song.
It's a good song, and it's interesting that they, you know, to see them recording it and putting it together. Unfortunately, with what we know about how experimental Radiohead are and the things they get up to in the studio, it's a shame that we watched them record one of the most normal songs they've ever done. It's just some people playing guitar, really.
I tell you what I really liked about that bit is that you could see the Stanley Donwood artwork, giant, up the side, yeah. and not how it obviously appears in the album, as obviously he was creating it as they recorded. It was just nice to see that visually. That
yeah.
That was there, present, when it all happened, like you told us.
You don't think of it necessarily as being what it is, which is big canvases of yeah, artwork,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Imagine, oh, he drew a little picture.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the big things. Trip to the Ensemble crew come back to do a Freak Juice commercial, which Freak is pretty juice. Arresting stuff.
But at that point, I wrote, oh no, the baby band is back. Freak Juice. So yeah.
There's something called Running, which is a collage of footage of the sun, which is manipulated back and forth into negative and normal. And then there is another standout, I think, which is the push/pulk/spinning plates thing. Which is directed by Johnny Hardstaff.
Is this the Matrix-y type?
It starts machinery. With orca shapes and then, yeah, digitally constructed machinery. And then you mm-hmm. see the machine and the machine starts working and spinning and dripping fluid. And then you realise a baby is in it. And then you realise it's actually two halves of identical babies that have been cut in half and their legs yeah. are at different angles.
Yeah.
And then the babies start... get spun around and then their skeletons leave their bodies, revealing the skeletons have been imprinted with the same China pattern like designs that are on the machine itself. It's very weird.
Yeah, it was really uncomfortable to watch, to be fair.
Yeah, it is uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. But it was very Matrix, just with the black pipes sticking out of them like they're a battery. I mean, you know, that's sort of well-worn territory, isn't it? Humans as batteries, but just gave me okay computer imagery again, like just all that machinery and stuff reminded me of the album cover.
Gave me Kid A vibes. You know why, like the idea of cloning a human or whatever. Yeah, probably.
Oh, yes. Gave me Pablo Honey vibes.
Really? Because the baby on the front cover. Yeah.
Completely.
Just yeah, I know you didn't, but yeah. go with it.
We turned it into something, though. Yeah.
This was released as an actual music video around the release of Amnesiac.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
For like spilling plates or...
For Pulk slash, well, they called it push/pulk on there. But yeah, it was the whole thing. It was the whole 7-minute thing or whatever it is. It didn't receive very much airplay. MTV said it was of a sensitive nature and only broadcast it a handful of times with a warning before it. that it would make people feel uncomfortable. The director, Johnny Hardstaff, said, "The irony is that you can't move on MTV for bland R&B and the empty boasts of artists effectively fixated with their own flaccid showbiz cocks. But any piece of film with an ounce of real emotion isn't going to get seen."
I mean, a guy with the name Hardstaff is going to talk about flaccid cocks quite a bit, I imagine.
That's probably true. then you get some more stuff of Tom playing Punch Up solo, which is probably from a webcast because it has the earlier lyrics. And then Chieftain Muse talks about how fear is the clip-clop of police horses. and then he welcomes us back by saying, "I've been expecting you," which is terrifying coming from Chieftain Muse. And then it's another one. So do you remember the one that is the dead dog being reanimated by a skeletal figure? And
it's like dog corpse,
horrifying. It's the same guy as the one as the guy who directed the one for Where I End and You Begin, with the bunny rabbit in the chest and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the same guy. Height, which is the wood animation.
I was going to say, I've written there's an extended scene of some wood grain to beats.
Right, but it looks like you're traveling. He's done it so it looks like you're traveling very, very quickly across the wood. Mm. And then you think, well, that's not that difficult because it's just a stop motion thing. But then he uses knots in the wood that get smaller and smaller and bigger and bigger and bigger to make it look like you're traveling into the wood through the knots that are in it. It's very cool. Very cool. And then after that, we get to see Johnny Greenwood just having a fucking jam. He's just jamming with himself on his little modular synth, doing loads of bleeps and bloops, and then someone's put some animation over that, which is cool. And then, of course, the instructional video of how to make a chicken bomb.
Yeah, the milk chicken. That was more OK Computer stuff, really, isn't it? It's like the instructional warning kind of labels and stuff. I really like that in a weird way. And it's still, that was quite funny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's one of the sort of weird, funny bits, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the George Bush hoedown.
Right, exactly. In between
George
those
bit was something.
In between those two things is a little tableau of animated photos with a wolf at the door, which is worth pointing out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But yes, the Homeland Hoedown, which starts with Hitler, who disguises himself as George W. H. Bush, who is then using George W. Bush as a ventriloquist dummy, giving a speech about terrorism and limiting of freedom, while Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, Elvis, and an alien do a ballet dance behind him.
It's normal stuff.
Just normal stuff.
It's kind of normal things.
And they cut up George W. Bush's words into like a hoedown song. It reminded me of Cassette Boy.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. That's something, isn't it? Isn't that a weird little bit of the DVD?
Yeah, it kind of stood out a bit, really. It was like a NoFX music video, like if you've ever seen Franco and American. Interesting, like how it was just so, I don't know, sort of making fun of George Bush was just like the biggest meme of the time, wasn't it? Like,
right, yeah.
I'm pretty sure, Adam, your sister had a poster of all the silly things George Bush had said in her bedroom.
Sounds like it might be true.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very of its time. Very, very 2004 of them. Although I suppose the interesting thing to say is, a good portion of this is not made by Radiohead. Like, a good portion of the DVD is not made by Radiohead. It's submissions that other artists have kind of put in. But this is the only one that then doesn't use even Radiohead music. This is just a whole, like, wholesale is just done by somebody else. Instead, it's done by Jason Archer and Paul Beck, who specialised in kind of pioneering rotoscoping, which is the process of animation where you kind of draw around a real sort of like figure. Have you seen the film A Scanner Darkly?
I have not seen it, but they also do that for stuff like Snow White. They did it. That's how they did the animation. They drew around actual.
So I'm talking about something different. That's not. It's not. It's a similar process, but it's a very, very different effect.
Oh, the kind of cell shaded kind of look.
Yeah, I know what
you mean. Yeah.
I've watched that film. I don't remember any of it because I was off my fucking mash, mate.
Oh, that's a good film to be off your mash. There's another film that was a little test for rotoscoping by the same director called Richard Linklater. called Waking Life, which is just people...
Also seen that. Yeah, that's fucking weird.
That's people just discussing what the nature of life is, and it's all, like, animated over real things. That's a good film to watch when you get off your mash, as it were.
I think there was a little period where me and some friends, that was a bit of a high staple. We'd just get high and watch Waking Life. I don't think I ever really followed what it was about or what it was doing. I wasn't even listening. I was just looking at it.
So I used to go to sleep to that movie. Like, really? I used to put that on every night. Yeah. It's not weirder than what you just said you were doing.
Get high and watch it. That's chill.
I'm high on life, my friend. High on life.
Right. It's got Alex Jones in it.
Does it actually?
He's Man in Car Wash. There you go.
Something. Okay.
We should stop mentioning him.
It all
is
comes
it,
back.
Is it Alex Jones or is it just a person called Alex Jones?
Well, he was in the rugby.
he was in rugby.
He was in the rugbies.
The town rugby. And then it's the actual music video for I Might Be Wrong. That is the actual music video, directed by Sophie Muller, who's directed like over 300 music videos. She's won Grammys. We've actually seen one of her videos before because she directed the music video for You Stole the Song From My Heart by Managing Creatures. A song that can fuck off, but the video is absolutely fine.
Is that the one where it cuts to them playing in a storm and then them in a room, or it just goes dark and light? Between the heavy and
there's some animated birds on it.
Yeah, that's it.
It's that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the final sort of thing is a performance of the national anthem, but the camera is focused entirely on one woman in the crowd who is watching the performance. What did you guys make of that?
God, it looks like a bad time. I found it very claustrophobic.
I didn't like it. I found it weird to just be staring at her face.
No, it wasn't that at all. Like, it made... She was so rammed in, and she looked like she was having a bad time every time Tom wasn't singing. But like, it reminded me of like, why are we just okay? I mean, I don't really go in that far in gigs anymore with being that rammed in. Like, it looks dangerous. That's what I took from that.
It's a very cool video, I think. Like, taking all of the performance out of it and just focusing on one person and their reaction to the music. You can see a lot of stuff on her face, from like the excitement and the elation of it to like being uncomfortable and genuinely worried at some points. I think there's someone who like crowd surfs over her head. Gets quite intense in some places. That's directed by Mike Mills, not the bassist of REM or close personal friend of Lucas, but he'd done music videos for like Beastie Boys and Beck. And he went on to direct Beginners. He won an Oscar for the film 20th Century Women. And he made Come On, Come On as well, the most recent Joaquin Phoenix film. There's a bit of pedigree in sort of like this episode 4 of The Most Gigantic Lion Mouth of All Time. And then, of course, we have Tutu Muse's No Surprises Karaoke, which it does surpass the original in many ways, don't you think?
Yeah. Wonderful.
And he signs off after his No Surprises Karaoke by saying, "Don't let the demons get you. They got me."
Mm.
And then that is sort of the end.
That's nice, isn't it?
Is it nice? Is that nice?
Is that nice? Oh, yeah, because they got him instead of me.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But they might come get you.
You going to watch this again, guys? Or
never in my life.
No, I will absolutely watch the Ed clip on YouTube every now and again.
Sure.
Because it's one of my favourite things. I love it.
I have to say, I don't like love this. I think there's some really interesting stuff on it. At most, I've probably watched this once, twice a day. At absolute most.
Since it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
At absolute most.
Yeah, pretty bang average then, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's really interesting. Like, and there's just some creepy art. And like, sometimes that's nice to get creeped out on purpose, you know? I won't seek it out, but like, there's some nice stuff in it. There's some cool stuff in it. There's some terrifying stuff and some non-stuff.
Yes, there's definitely some non-stuff. It's also cool that a band this big are doing stuff this weird.
Yeah.
You know, like Radiohead in 2003 are doing weird little collage art installation videos and stuff like that. It's just sort of vaguely interesting.
It's very like of its, I don't know, it's the exact sort of, I just feel like you wouldn't get this sort of thing anymore because it's very the sort of thing you put on a DVD.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Do you get DVDs anymore?
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
I'm with you. DVDs. Sorry, yes.
I buy DVDs, yeah.
Like, what's the platform for this now? Like, well, I mean, apart from like doing the sketches individually in like TikTok. Instagram stories.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. It's very of a specific time, I suppose. Yeah. It existing on DVD at all is very interesting. It's the first sign that at this point Radiohead are now going to be a band who do whatever they want on their own terms, even more so than before, because they self-released this DVD. It was initially only available on their web shop, Waste, W-A-S-T-E, which stands for We Are Sensibly Talking Endlessly. And it comes, I've got it here, comes with like full liner notes and soundtrack listings and a message from Tom explaining what it is and like why it exists and stuff like that.
Merch corner.
Yeah, a little merch corner. And there is no record label push behind this. It does not say EMI on the back or whatever. It says Waste 001 because it was the first thing they'd ever released on their own with no record label interference. Just kind of out there doing their own thing in December 2004.
It's interesting that but it was a promotional tool for the album, really, right? And then also it contained songs from the record label that the record label own, and they were allowed to release that on their own. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that they have a stake at some, like, in some kind of capacity in their own music.
Yeah, exactly. But it kind of was and wasn't a promotional thing. When it was on the internet, it was a promotional thing, but the DVD didn't come out for a year and a half after the album came out.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
So that's December 2004. And then there is no real Radiohead news for like years, except a few little things. Okay? Clips from The Most Gigantic Lion Mouth of All Time were used in the little breaks in the performance of Johnny Greenwood at the 2005 Ether Festival, which took place on London's South Bank. A year prior to that, in March 2004, Johnny had debuted his first ever concert work, which was called Smear, for a 16-piece orchestra, I think it was. And we will cover Johnny's concert works in one big episode towards the end, but I thought we could do a little clip. Let's play a little clip of Smear, Johnny Greenwood's first concert work.
Mm.
You can hear the Ons Martino in there as well.
He fucking loves that, doesn't he?
Fucking loves it. He won't leave it alone. And then in 2005, so we're catching up to ourselves a little bit here, he debuted Popcorn Superhet Receiver, which I believe was played at the Ether Festival. And that was his first commission as part of his new role as composer in residence for the BBC Concert Orchestra.
Blimey.
So he's now employed by the BBC to be their kind of composer in residence at this point.
Sellout!
I know, what a fucking sellout. So I think he did play Popcorn Superhet Receiver at Ether Festival, but he also debuted something new, and invited a guest vocalist to perform the piece with him and the orchestra. You may not have heard of this lead vocalist, Thom Yorke.
Mm.
I think that
sounds a lot like something else. That
Ringing a bell.
Ringing a bell.
Apparently, he's pretty famous. Don't know how Johnny got him.
It sounds like you're going into a shop and asking for multiple chocolate bars. Like you're saying, some.
Can I have Thom Yorke?
Thom Yorke. Yeah.
Do you remember when a Yorkie used to have a segment for every letter of the word Yorkie?
No.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bloody.
7 segments.
Seven segments.
Now only get 6.
Segments.
Yeah. Septments.
Oh, that's better. That is better. Is Do you want to hear a clip of the orchestral?
Oh, it's Tom York.
It is Tom York, yeah. Do you want to hear a little clip of the orchestral thing that he did with Tom York and added his vocals onto?
More than anything else in the world, Adam.
Not that much.
Oh.
Still, I will, but not as much as that.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's very Radiohead.
Isn't it? It's interesting that I thought you'd get it instantly, so that's interesting.
Oh.
Obviously, it's offering rainbows. Shh, shh,
shh. Weird Fishes.
Yeah. It's called Arpeggi at this point.
Well, it's called Weird Fishes / Arpeggi, isn't it, on the album?
Is it that way around? I can't remember.
Yeah, Weird Fishes Arpeggi is the name. Fucking come on, Adam.
I thought you might like to hear like a bit more of it. I think Tom comes in soon. In the deepest ocean, the bottom of the sea, your eyes, they turn. I'm going to skip around a bit. There's some bits that I just really want to show you, Lucas. Everybody leaves if they get the chance. It's my chance. Also, this bit as well. That's called Arpeggi, and is...
Where can I hear that? Is that, like, on anything, or is that, like...
It's on YouTube. It is YouTube. As a little bootleg. You can watch Tom trying to figure out the timing with his hands and stuff. Yeah, so there you go. Obviously, Lucas, you'll have recognised that. Steve, you will have realised from Lucas recognising it that it will come back at some point.
Yeah.
Johnny Greenwood, good composer, IMO. Also in 2005, Johnny and Phil were part of the band that plays in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
I watched that film last night.
The film adapted from the book by Notorious TERF, J.K. Rowling. Notorious. Notorious.
Wait, is she like out digging in the fields?
Was
that a TERF in like medieval times?
You're thinking of surf.
That's a surf.
Yeah, but I thought you meant she was digging up grass, which is turf, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, that's also good.
I thought that's what you were doing.
They are part of the band called the Weird Sisters.
No, they're not.
Go on.
No? Watch that film last night, mate. There was a legal dispute, and they weren't allowed to be called the Weird Sisters. Okay. And so, no, they weren't at any point referred to as the Weird Sisters.
Are they in the
book?
They weren't referred to, but they were in
the
book,
they are.
Right?
Yeah, in the film, they've got a whole different name, though.
Are they?
Which is what?
Oh, don't make me look it up. Sisters, Goblet of Fire film. I was literally looked this up last night.
Because I'm on the Harry Potter wiki here. And
I watched that film last night.
The Weird Sisters are a very popular band in the wizarding world, portrayed by...
Yeah, keep reading.
Johnny Greenwood.
Stuff.
Anyway,
Jarvis Cocker, right?
Yeah,
behind the scenes. Yes, Jarvis Cocker.
Singing about ogres.
Here we go. They're not allowed to be called the Weird Sisters in the film because... they are, because of a legal dispute with a folk band called the Weird Sisters with a Y.
W-Y-R-D, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're simply introduced as the band that needs no introduction by Phileas Flitwick.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I said they were given a different name. They weren't.
You thought they were called...
The band that needs no introduction.
You thought they were called That Needs No Introduction. Please welcome the band that needs no introduction.
Such a weird, like, I literally watched it last night because me and my wife are watching all the Harry Potter films.
No, you want all that lovely, juicy context, don't you? So that's what
yeah, you really want to get deep. Fire.
Yeah. And I it's so, like, seeing Johnny Greenwood.
Johnny Greenwood?
Thom Yorke and Johnny Greenwood.
In a Harry Potter film for two shots is so, that's such a random choice. A random choice.
Are you okay? Are you turning into Matt Bellamy?
Jonathan Wass.
is Goblet of Fire the one with the absolute tune? Dun, 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 dun. My boy!
Yeah.
What?
I
don't know what that is. Johnny Greenwood looks incredible, though. His costume, he's like got his shirt unbuttoned like to the waist, and he's in like black lipstick and eyeshadow and stuff, living his absolute best goth life.
Yeah, he plays a character called Curly Duke, apparently.
Okay. Excellent.
K-I-R-L-E-Y.
And the song's Curly called Do the Hippogriff.
Yes, the song is called Do the Hippogriff. You can find it on YouTube if you want to watch Johnny Greenwood play. Because obviously he recorded the music as well. He was in the studio recording Do the Hippogriff. Do go on YouTube if you want to see Johnny Greenwood performing Do the Hippogriff.
As Curly Duke.
I'm telling you, man, Radiohead have lightened up here, haven't they?
Yeah, man, definitely.
Do people who write on, like, media-specific wikis, right? Like brand-specific wikis. Do they just make up absolute bollocks?
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah.
It's just, because I can't imagine they're exactly, like, well-moderated. Because you can go on the page for Curly Duke,
yep,
and it's got a whole load of information about him that I can't imagine is anywhere, is actually true. It's just people have just decided these things.
Yeah, I mean, that happens with Lord of the Rings and stuff, right?
Curly owned a guitar that was confiscated by Argus Filch in the school year of 1989 to 1990. Based on what?
That's gotta be in something. It's like all the stuff around every single face you've ever seen in Star Wars.
Yeah,
like they all have their backstory. Like deep lore and everything.
Like just that cantina scene. Every character has a backstory, but every backstory is like they're like a hero. They've got this gigantic adventure they've been on. It's not just some bloke who went for a drink. It's someone who like freed an entire planet.
Why aren't they making those films?
Well, like that demon guy, the guy who looks like the devil in the cantina. I want that.
Why
movie.
Why do I have to put up with a fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi TV series when I could be watching a whole series about the fucking guy who looks like the demon from Legend? It'd be excellent.
Apparently that information comes from a mobile game called Harry Potter Hogwarts Mastery.
There you go, which is lore.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Sanctioned by Notorious Turf, J.K. Rowling. So then, later on in that year, September the 8th, 2005 is where we are, okay? And we've been here before, guys. We've been here before for exactly this release, okay? And it's a sister release to something that we've also covered twice. In 1995, The Help charity album was released. Now, this is the fourth time we've talked about a Help charity album, so you guys must remember
Muse and Mannix.
I don't think Muse were on it.
Muse did the One War Love Child. War Child.
Yeah,
one.
They did War Child. Right. The gimmick is, for the Help ones, bands have the same 24 hours to record a song, okay?
Yeah.
In 1995, Radiohead contributed Lucky, and Manic Street Preachers contributed Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And then 10 years later, which is 2005, if you're going to do the maths, a sequel is organised to aid war-torn countries like Bosnia and, you know, all the stuff that's going on in Europe at that time. And on September the 8th, 2005, a bunch of bands go into various studios. We've got Coldplay, Razorlight, Keane, Gorillaz, Maximo Park, Hardfi.
Really of the time.
Imagine being able to get Hardfi. Yeah, incredible. And two bands that contributed to the original release, Mannix and Radiohead. They were the only two returning bands, which is weird that we've covered both. Mannix contributed Leviathan in 2005, which we covered way back in season one, I think on our either Lifeblood or Send Away the Tigers episodes. Mm.
It's on the Lifeblood episode.
Cool. And Radiohead contributed a song called I Want None of This. Thank you.
can keep what you want.
Great sense of what a great and unique vocalist he is when you just shove him next to piano and that's it, right?
Yeah.
It's very easy for all of that. I know we talk about a lot how he's a good singer, but it's so easy for that to get lost under all the mad shit going on, especially recently with like Kid A. And stuff. I say recently, that was several weeks ago, but this feels like very movie soundtrack to me, like almost adjacent to the Romeo and Juliet-ness.
Interesting. You know? Interesting. Is that just its status as a little standalone track or something? Maybe?
Could be that. You could hear this as like a little someone in a walking sadly in the rain. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very miserable. It reminds me a little bit of We Suck Young Blood, which is obviously from around the same time, although not, you know, it's a couple of years after, I suppose. Tom York, strong vocalist, because he's obviously doing all the harmonies on this as well.
I like how you just rephrase Tom York, good singer, with Tom York, strong vocalist, as if it then becomes a new take.
We can't keep making the same points again and again and again, which is why I've also got written down Tom York, excellent pipes.
Pretty sure it said good pipes before.
Yeah, but this is, I'm saying excellent.
Excellent is different.
It's a different criticism, isn't it?
It's different. It's not. Yeah. Is it a criticism?
Yeah, you can have positive criticisms. It's a critical analysis, my friend.
Of the cultural impact.
Yeah, but
creatures.
Well, we've started the episode again. We have to go back through the most gigantic lying mouth of all time.
No.
Isn't it interesting, though, that I said that Radiohead contributed this song? Because did they?
This is just Tom, York, Tom isn't it?
It's just Tom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you guys pick up on that? I mean, I guess you did.
Yeah, I imagined.
I guess... Is it purely just if it's listed as being a Radiohead song? Because, you know, there's plenty of songs for plenty of bands, which is just like solo guitar and acoustic or whatever, and it still counts as a Manic song or whatever. It's just how you frame it. And that then means the other guys get some money.
Well, yeah. It's a charity album, so they don't get any money.
They'll get all the money.
Right, so it's...
For God's sake, Bosnia.
What do you think of the song, though, Lucas? It's pretty nice, right?
It's just very nice. I mean, I haven't got a huge amount to say about it. It's just
not loads to say. Yeah.
It's a nice little song, isn't it? Nice, good singing, nice piano, nice.
Not say nice, good singing. We've said it's good.
We've said
singing
nice, good
already.
Singing. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. I do like the lyric. If you get off your knees, you'll be out on a breeze. Take a lesson from me and don't get stuck on a dream. That's quite nice.
That's nice.
It's probably recorded around the same time as him going on Nigel Godrich's new internet TV show, which is called From the Basement. Okay, so you may have heard of the TV series. It's not, it's internet TV, but you may have heard of the series From the Basement. It actually recently came back, and it's where Nigel Godrich, who created the show, has bands play in Maida Vale Studios, and he records and films them. The pilot episode, the first episode, was Tom York performing some things on his own on the piano. I think this is probably recorded around then. Right. But this wasn't televised. The ones that were televised... He plays a song called Last Flowers, which is a song from the OK Computer sessions and had been debuted live at an acoustic show that Tom did in April 2005. He also played a song called Down is the New Up, a song called Analyze, and a song called Videotape, all three of which were debuted on that first episode of Nigel Godrich's show in 2005. So it's just Tom on piano. They've whacked some harmonies on it, but there's a good chance, I think, that the charity album will sell more copies if it has the word Radiohead on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Than if it has the word Tom York on it, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, it's labelled as Radiohead. I also think he wasn't probably ready to like do a solo sort of thing and have it labeled as like Tom York. You know what I mean? Because he had talked around this time of like, nah, I wouldn't do a solo album. I'd never go solo. So that'll never happen ever. But it also shows that they will lend their name to charitable causes and such, depending on the cause. Because earlier that year, Bob Geldof had asked them to take part in Live 8. Do you remember this?
Yeah. You went.
The follow-up to 1985's Live Aid. Yes, I went to that. Did you go?
No.
Oh, did you say I went?
Yeah, I went, you went.
Oh, right. I thought you said
I remember it
I
well.
Went.
Okay. I remember that you went.
Great memories from a lovely day. the London show in Hyde Park, which is the one I went to, included performances by Paul McCartney and U2 and Coldplay. And,
hold the phone.
Yeah.
You went to that.
Yeah.
So you made quite a, you were quite, you know, you were very excited this year about Glastonbury because you were like,
I'd never seen Paul McCartney.
A real life Beatle. What, yeah. Did you not watch Paul McCartney? What happened there?
The queue was so poorly managed, right, that we got in 15 minutes, about half an hour late. They couldn't get everybody in on time and Paul McCartney was the first on.
Oh, oh my God. Also, Steve just went like really Valley Girl there.
Although,
oh my God.
I'm sure he was on later. I might just be misremembering. I'm sure he was on later in the evening as well. Because I also saw Pink Floyd and The Who and Robbie Williams and Stereophonics. I'll tell you what, though, it was the original lineup of Pink Floyd, which turned out to be their last ever appearance and also wasn't something that they had done in the previous 25 years. So I must have seen Paul McCartney and just sort of forgot.
Yeah, Paul McCartney was first. I'm just looking it up.
Yeah, yeah. It was him and U2, right? Because I missed U2 as well.
Oh, no, but he also played last, Adam.
He didn't play last because it closed with Pink Floyd. Oh, no, it did close with... Do you know what? We might have left after Pink Floyd.
Oh, man. Idiot, mate. So you come in, so you miss Paul McCartney. You miss Paul McCartney coming in early. And then you're like, well, it doesn't matter, though, because I'll leave early and I'll miss...
You know
I'll
what,
miss
right?
Paul McCartney again.
My
playing
mum,
fucking Hey Jude.
My mum, I went with my mum because she was the one who won the tickets. She's a huge Pink Floyd fan. She went to see the original tour of The Wall when they did it on the Berlin Wall. So she was really excited to see Pink Floyd in its original lineup. And I was not a Paul McCartney boy at that point. I didn't really know much of the Beatles at that point in my life. So we probably did leave after Pink Floyd.
I don't know. You got to see David Walliams and Matt Lucas as Lou and Andy.
I did. And I saw Ricky Gervais introduce REM. And Brad Pitt came out and did a little speech and stuff. Anyway, Radiohead turned it down.
Right.
They said they didn't want to do it. They said they saw it more as a way of artists to boost their profile than actually do any good in the world. Tom York said, "You can't solve these kinds of problems with a rock concert. A riot, maybe, but not a rock concert." Which, possibly a good point. Steve, do you remember what Live 8 was all about? What were they trying to do?
Stop bad.
Yep.
Please.
But we all remember that fucking Pink Floyd played and all of that shit. Yeah, so it probably did a great job of boosting some artist profiles. And no one really remembers what it's about. It was about Make Poverty History. It was kind of a bit confusing. It had the white bands. It was an attempt to get the G8 to drop the debt in third world countries. Didn't work. And nobody remembers why it was happened, but everyone remembers that they got to see Keane for free.
It's really weird that it was. It's really weird that it was at Hyde Park and not Wembley.
Well, Hyde Park's bigger. Apparently, there was
250,000. Yeah, I know, but like Live Aid was at Wembley, and that's like, you know, yeah. Having said that, Wembley was probably being redone actually. New Wembley opened in like 2007.
Yeah, that's true. The old one had been torn down, hadn't it? Yeah. Mm. Anyway, while all of that stuff was going on, the Ether Festival and I Want None of This and Live Aid and everything, Radiohead had begun to reconvene in Oxford in late 2004 to begin working on something. It seemed like something new was coming, even though they were outside of contract and it looked like it would be sooner rather than later. Which turned out to be wildly wrong. They started in late 2004, And the next Radiohead album comes out in late 2007. There is a big gap there.
A gulf. Well, big and at the time.
In that gap, we're going to be covering some stuff, guys. Some stuff. Next week, we're going to take advantage of that little break in their career to sum up how we feel about them so far and do some, like, best of track listings and stuff like that. Then we've got, like, I think hopefully we'll have an interview with a fan of Radiohead. Then Thom Yorke releases a solo album. He does actually release a solo album, guys. I don't know if that's very surprising for you.
So you just said he wouldn't.
You said that in a really weird way. It sounded like you said, got an interview with a fan, and then Thom Yorke
releases a solo album. Yeah. And then Radiohead go on tour as well. So it's a busy period, if not strictly album-based, but we'll get into that more next week because that's the end of this episode. Before we do go, can I read an email?
Yes.
Huh? This is some, I don't know how to say this, it's from Brad Ridout. Ridout? Ridow? Who knows? No one will ever know. Mm-hmm. Hey, big mates, big fan here. Long-time listener, first-time emailer from Australia. Is that good?
Mike!
No, don't. What's the name, everyone. Brad?
Yeah.
Big fan of Bluey, Brad. Great program. Well done, Australians.
I don't know what that even could begin. Fantastic
yeah. kids TV show.
Big fan of... There's a
kids TV show called Bluey.
Bluey.
Oh, Bluey, and everyone fucking loves him.
Okay, all right. Shut up, both of you. We're listening to Brad now. I've been listening to the podcast since the start of season 2, and as a Muse and Radiohead tragic, I've thoroughly enjoyed every second.
I love the idea of the collective noun for fans of those bands being a tragic.
As a busy family man who's just left his 30s and now only ever gets to talk shite about music with mates over occasional text messages, you three have nicely filled that void, and though I obviously can't contribute in real time, I frequently find myself chuckling along, especially when Adam breaks into his Ricky Gervais-esque laugh. That's highly offensive. That's absolutely what a revolting thing to say. So although you aren't asking if it is rad in my head in relation to you, the podcast, I just wanted to tell you that yes, it is. It is rad in his head. That's good.
Oh, great.
Like many Aussies of UK descent, I returned to the motherland in my early 20s, which for me coincided with a big golden era for these two great bands, and I was lucky enough to see Radiohead at Earl's Court and Muse at Wembley Arena on back-to-back nights in November 2003. The former was one of the best concert experiences of my life to this day, while Muse's Wembley show was soon eclipsed by the Earl's Court shows in December 2004. He's put a little bracket, you were at those ones, weren't you, Lucas?
Shut the fuck up.
I've seen Muse half a dozen times since returning to Australia, with diminishing returns each time, it has to be said. However, Radiohead have sadly only toured here once since 2004.
Yeah, you can take the piss I didn't go to Earl's Court, but Muse haven't played in Australia for about a fucking 1,000 years, so who's laughing now?
He just said Muse he's seen like fucking loads since then.
Not in recent years, mate. Not in recent years.
You've spoken about the long wait between Radiohead albums, but please spare a thought for us here in Australia, where Radiohead only tour every second album, meaning we've been waiting almost a decade since the last tour, and the way things are going, we could be waiting a decade more. Well, or more than that, because they've broken up. Anyway, I'm writing to throw out some thoughts I've had while listening to you guys over the last year or so, because I've never gotten around to engaging in any of the short form social media methods. I've picked up on a few subtle and not so subtle references to autism spectrum over the course of the podcast, and as someone who has recently discovered that they sit at the high functioning end of it, I've noticed more and more how absolutely rife this kind of neurodiversity is in the world of online music fans, not only in the all-consuming special interest aspect that drives us to consume every piece of information about a band and listen to them obsessively, but in the way difficulty to access emotions can be unlocked for us through song. Even for those like me for whom lyrics are completely secondary for the music. For example, my parents split up when I was 9 years old, and I barely shed a tear at the time, nor since. I've actually always thought that it barely affected me. However, when I listen to Claire's Ninth, a touching song about divorce by Ben Folds, I turn into a blubbering mess every single time. Another aspect I see online is the drive to track down every single B-side, rarity, early demo or live performance by a band. I've done this myself with many bands over the years, including Radiohead, and assembled them into fan-made box sets to share with other fans, complete with professional-looking artwork and remastered audio. You may or may not be familiar with my 20-CD Radiohead set entitled Every Last Crumb. which I actually do recognise because I think I must have downloaded that at some point. But if not, may I suggest you check it out, as it may come in handy for the podcast and is thoughtfully arranged in such a way that you can dip in for a rewarding Radiohead listen when you get sick of the regular albums. I also put together a similar 20 CD set for Muse's B-sides and rarities. Lucas, I don't know if you want to look that up. It's called Muse, the Complete B-Sides and Rarities.
They don't have that many B-sides. I'm wondering what that's filled with.
It's probably like loads of early versions and like them doing jams and stuff like that, right? And jams that turn into songs later on down the line or whatever.
Yeah, it'll be like a whole section of like Edinburgh Jam.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Other bands I've produced fan-made projects like this for over the years include Pearl Jam, Nirvana, U2, REM, Queens of the Stone Age, Sleater Kinney, Interpol, The National, as well as some treasure trove of carefully put together live compilations for Radiohead, Pearl Jam, and others. I tell you this not for self-promotion, but because I know how much I enjoy fan-made compilations made by others. So given they are out there on the interwebs, I just think anyone with anything approaching my level of fandom for these bands should know about them. One final behaviour common among obsessive online music fans is the compulsive need to correct mistakes, a la the geeks in The Simpsons, when Itchy plays scratchy skeletons like a xylophone and strikes the same rib twice in succession to produce two clearly different tones.
I hope somebody was fired for that blunder.
I've found Radiohead fans can be the worst at this, with the music website Consequence of Sound actually launching a Radiohead podcast a few years ago specifically to troll these kind of fans by calling them grunge and referring to things like the album Hail to the King and Radiohead's drummer Clive Deamer. Needless to say, many fans completely missed the joke and lost their collective heads. Anyway, I'm so glad that a quality Radiohead podcast like yours finally exists. I've enjoyed it immensely so far and learned things I didn't know, like how early on the band had High and Dry. And I look forward to future seasons too. And although I'd like to see Steve have a chance to finally choose a season, if you are looking to further increase the gender diversity, I'd like to suggest Mitski, one of the most interesting and unique unique songwriters around today, and queen of form meeting function. I love Mitski. Do you guys know Mitski?
Not aware of Mitski, mate.
She's fantastic.
First time I've heard that word.
You've definitely heard one of her songs on TikTok, which is the one that goes, nobody, nobody. Yes. That one, yes. You've heard that one.
Don't know that.
Best wishes from the colony, Brad. P.S. My favourite Radiohead album, I hear you ask. With the exception of Pablo Honey and the King of Limbs, it's been every single one at some stage. However, I think OK Computer is objectively the best album of its era, if not all time, due to the sheer number of undisputable five-star songs. PPS, my Radiohead top 10, I hear you ask. Well, interesting. Number 10, Jigsaw Falling Into Place. Number 9, Where I End and You Begin. Number 8, Dex Dark. Number 7, Let Down. 6, Lucky. 5, Pyramid Song. Number 4, Street Spirit. Number 3, Karma Police. Number 2, Paranoid Android. Number 1, How to Disappear Completely. Wow. Amazing. Thank you so much, Brad. That's such a PPPS. May as well do Muse while I'm at it. 10, okay. Dead Star. 9, Easily. 8, Newborn. 7, Time is Running Out. 6, Knights of Cydonia. 5, Citizen Erased. 4, Plug In Baby. 3, Hysteria. 2, Stockholm Syndrome. And 1, Map of the Problematic. Excellent choice there, Brad. Thank you so much for the incredibly long, detailed, but lovely email.
That is great.
That's excellent. Yeah, loved that. And cool top tens as well. Jigsaw Falling Into Place being on the Radiohead one is very cool, and Easily being on the Muse one is also very cool.
Can you just write in your Billie Eilish top 10 as well at some point?
Yeah, we do. We are going to need the Billie Eilish top 10. And
complete.
The Manics. We need the Manics top 10 as well. Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Manic.
That brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Come and let us know what you think of the most gigantic lying mouth of all time. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at What Is Music Pod. No, wait. Well, we're not at What Is Music Pod on TikTok, are we? I meant Facebook.
I thought you were able to fix this. I thought we had a possible solution to this.
No, we
bollocks.
Don't. There's no solutions to any bollocks. So it doesn't matter. Right. What Is Music Pod? Everywhere except TikTok, which is What Is Music. And if you want to send in something a little bit longer like Brad did, we'll read it out on the show. Email us, whatismusicpod@gmail.com. There's also a couple of ways that you can support us other than listening if you would like to. One is to buy our merchandise. If you go to whatismusicpod.redbubble.com, you'll find some stupid designs and one John Major one. And if you'd like to just chuck us a few quid, you can go to coffee.com/whatismusic. All donations are very gratefully received and go towards our running costs. That about does it. Thanks again for listening. But before you go, please don't leave me high.
Don't leave me high.
Bye.